Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book, 23 Things They Do Not Tell You About Capitalism by Ha Jun Cheng is a work of popular political economy that challenges the assumptions behind neoliberal and free market thinking. Written after the 2008 financial crisis, the book presents 23 short arguments against ideas commonly treated as economic common sense, including the belief that markets are naturally free, that globalization reliably enriches everyone, that high executive pay reflects superior performance, and that government should stay out of economic management. Cheng does not reject capitalism itself. Instead, he argues that capitalism has always existed in many forms, and that prosperous economies have usually depended on active public institutions, regulation, industrial policy, and social protection. The book is aimed at general readers rather than specialists, using accessible examples and historical comparisons to show that economic rules are political choices. Its purpose is to make readers more skeptical of expert dogma and more capable of judging economic policy as citizens. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, markets are designed by rules, rather than naturally free. One of Cheng's central arguments is that there is no such thing as a completely free market. Every market depends on rules about property, contracts, labor, money, trade, safety, taxation, and corporate behavior. What appears to be natural market freedom is usually a political settlement that has become familiar enough to seem invisible. For example, societies no longer treat child labor, unsafe workplaces, or unlimited pollution as acceptable market choices, even though earlier forms of capitalism often did. Cheng uses this point to challenge the claim that government intervention is always a distortion of an otherwise pure economic order. In his view, the real question is not whether markets should be regulated, because they always are. The important question is whose interests the rules serve and what social goals they support. This argument shifts the debate from ideology to institutional design. If markets are built, then citizens can legitimately debate how they should be built, including how they balance efficiency, fairness, innovation, stability, and democratic accountability. Secondly, the 2008 crisis exposed the limits of self-correcting finance. The book was shaped by the aftermath of the 2008 financial crisis, which Cheng treats as evidence against the belief that lightly regulated markets reliably correct themselves. And to customers, the crisis showed that financial actors can generate profits for themselves while creating risks for the wider economy. When complex financial products, short-term incentives, and weak oversight combine, private gain may be separated from social cost. Cheng argues that this is not a minor failure inside an otherwise flawless system, but a predictable result of excessive faith in deregulation. His criticism is not simply that bankers behave badly. It is that the institutional environment rewarded behavior that increased fragility. This matters because financial markets are not isolated casinos. Credit, debt, investment, pensions, housing, and public budgets are deeply connected to ordinary livelihoods. Cheng therefore supports stronger public supervision of finance and a broader understanding of economic responsibility. Stability, in his account, is not the enemy of prosperity. It is one of the conditions that makes long-term investment and shared prosperity possible. Thirdly, rich countries often developed through managed capitalism. Cheng repeatedly challenges the idea that today's rich countries became wealthy by following the free trade and minimal state advice often given to poorer countries. Drawing on his broader work in development economics, he emphasizes that many successful economies use tariffs, subsidies, public investment, state-backed credit, and industrial policy at important stages of their development. The point is not that every intervention works or that protectionism is always wise. Rather, it is that historical experience is more varied than free market narratives admit. Countries such as the United States, Britain in earlier periods, Japan, South Korea, and others did not simply wait for unregulated markets to select industries and build productive capacity. Governments helped shape learning, technology, infrastructure, and export strength. This argument has major implications for globalization. If rich countries used active state tools when they were developing, it is inconsistent to deny all similar tools to poorer nations. Cheng's position is that development requires policy space, experimentation, and institutions suited to national circumstances rather than a universal formula. Fourthly, economic value is often misread through pay and technology. A distinctive feature of the book is its use of counterintuitive examples to question how societies measure economic contribution. Cheng argues that high pay does not automatically prove high productivity or superior social value. Executive compensation, for instance, may reflect bargaining power. Institutional norms, weak shareholder oversight, and global labor market structures, rather than purely exceptional performance, This challenges the moral story that income distribution simply mirrors merit. Chang also questions fashionable assumptions about technology. His claim that the washing machine changed the world more than the internet is meant to highlight how domestic technologies transformed unpaid labor, gender roles, time use, and social participation. The example is not a rejection of digital technology, but a warning against measuring importance by novelty or prestige alone. These arguments broaden economic evaluation beyond market prices and headlines. They ask readers to notice hidden labor, institutional power, and long-term social effects. In doing so, Chang shows that capitalism often rewards visibility and control more clearly than genuine contribution. Lastly, ordinary citizens can judge economic policy without technical deference. Chang's book is also an argument about democratic participation in economic life. He rejects the idea that economics is too technical for ordinary citizens to discuss meaningfully. Although specialized knowledge matters, he argues that many central economic questions are not neutral technical puzzles but choices about priorities, trade-offs, and power. Should a country protect jobs or prioritize lower prices? Should finance be allowed broad freedom or be constrained for stability? Should public services be treated as costs or as foundations for productivity and welfare? These are not decisions that can be left entirely to experts, because they involve values as well as data. Chang, therefore, encourages active economic citizenship, meaning informed skepticism toward policy claims that present themselves as inevitable. The practical implication is not that every reader must become an economist. It is that citizens should recognize when economic arguments hide political assumptions. This makes the book especially important as a public education text, because it turns economics from a closed professional language into a field of democratic judgment. In conclusion, 23 things they do not tell you about capitalism is best suited to readers who want an accessible but serious challenge to free market orthodoxy. It will be especially useful for students, voters, policy observers, activists, journalists, and general readers trying to understand why debates about trade, regulation, inequality, finance, and globalization remain politically contested. Its practical benefit lies in teaching readers to ask better questions. Instead of accepting claims that markets demand a certain policy, readers learn to ask who made the market rules, who benefits from them, and what alternative arrangements have worked historically. Its intellectual benefit is that it presents capitalism as a flexible institutional system, rather than a single natural order. Compared with many books in the same category, it stands out for combining short, memorable arguments with development history and institutional analysis. It is less technical than academic economics, and less polemical than many anti-capitalism books. Because Chang argues for a better governed capitalism, rather than simple rejection of markets, the book's strength is its ability to make familiar economic claims look less inevitable. It gives readers a structured way to think about capitalism as a set of choices that can be redesigned through democratic debate and historical learning. If you would like to support Ha Jun Chang, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.